Well, it's a shame to screw up what all these lovely girls have established, but it's just time. Before I do that, though, I'd like to thank Clarence. And did you ever notice the program? Got all the trustees listed here? The Al-Anons having to support the whole bunch. They say, you know, if you've got a good Al-Anon group, you've got a good AA group. I would like to especially thank Martha, who got everything straight while Clarence and I screwed it up. And the committee and the trustees, and to give a guy a privilege to come to a place like this and be a guy that's only been here a little over 13 years, almost 14, and be with these guys that's been here much longer. And I'm sorry most of you missed that Thursday night. That was really sweet to start things off. And I knew that Thursday night what it was like to be on the mountaintop. And known it ever since I was here. Before we cry and I lay down, I am Jim Williams, and I'm an alcoholic. I was raised in a little town in West Texas where nobody drank. So I'm not supposed to be where I am. And I was raised with a guy standing up here just like this, and we had one drunk in town, and he was bad. He drank wine and bay rum and slept downtown. I never got to talk to him. I don't know how it might have been fine sleeping downtown. I don't know. I just tried never to drink bay rum and try to get out of town before I went to sleep. I never wanted to be bad, so I just worked all my life trying not to be bad. And they had a guy stand up just like me, and he'd point your finger at you and say, if you think it, you might as well have done it. Hell, I was thinking it before I even knew what it was. But I could just tell I was one of those, and I wasn't one of them. And I could tell by looking at them, they weren't thinking what I was thinking. And I wasn't even old enough to be thinking. In fact, I hadn't even started feeling. And I got to be 12, which you'll do if you just don't do anything. And I got around this girl and started feeling. And I never had done that before. And they'd been looking at me funny anyway. I must have had that whatever that is you get in my eye already before I got to knowing what it was. And they'd sing that last stanza for that one right back there, and they'd point, you know. And I knew it was me. You know, it's not like AA. They said, well, I saw old Clarence lay in the ditch last night. If he lives, we'll get him. And this bunch, they just hone in on one, you know. They've got a bad one in the group, so they're all praying for him. And I knew it was me. I just knew it was me. And I knew when I got around that girl and got those feelings, I had it. I had a bad case of it. So I told them, and they said, we've been meaning to talk to you. Say, I knew it. Hell, I knew it. I've been knowing it for a long time. So they said, meet me before the funeral, or the ceremony, and I met them, and they get you in that little room, and two guys, and they put it on you. Well, you're going to join. You're going to join them, I'll tell you. And I want to be good, and I want them to think I'm good, and I want them to love me, and whatever it is I've already don't have enough of, I ain't got enough of it, and I'm looking for it. And so, sure enough, I wait till they sing that last stanza for that right back there. And then it's kind of like AA, except don't give out any chips. You come down front, and they hug you and kiss you and tell you how great you are, and you know you're not, but God, I like it, you know. And they put you in the tank, and the hamster fleets, and you choke a little, but hell, you come out okay. Went to school the next day and saw that girl, came right back. I went back to him and said, we're going to have to do it again. Didn't take. They said, no, you just don't do it. Well, they didn't know. I didn't know how to don't do anything. So I went back to them and I said, how do you don't do it? Don't think about it. I said, well, I've been thinking about it all day today. I'll just go ahead and think about it the rest of the day, and in the morning I won't think about it. Got up every morning and said, now I'm not going to think about that. Got to where I thought about it so much that I think about it, thought about it all the time. Finally, 30 miles away, there was a town that was wild and wicked. And I'd heard about it, but I didn't know anything about it. And I finally got out of high school. Had to go to summer school, get out of high school. I had a lot of activities going. I didn't get to study a lot. Didn't know how anyway. And I was afraid to ask. And we slipped across 30 miles on Saturday. That's where you could do it during the week. We took a bath. It was Saturday, and we slipped over there and opened the door of that honky-tonk beer joint. And there was that deacon with a warm girl in one hand and a cold beer in the other. I said, my God, let's get out of here. He'll tell Jesus on us. And we didn't even get to do it. You know, if you get caught before you get to do it, you ought to just give it up. He said, well, he can't tell anybody, but I didn't know that. And sure enough, he was happier than I'd ever seen him. I thought he was just a sad sack. Of course, I never did see him except on Sunday morning. And he didn't say anything to me. We had two beers. It didn't do anything. And I was just glad to get out of there. Didn't taste good. Didn't feel good. Didn't do anything. And then next morning, I got up and I wanted to go to church for the first time since I could remember. Always went, just never wanted to go. And by gosh, there he was, sad like he always was, and with a different girl, you know. Then I had my first spiritual awakening. Maybe you can do it a little bit and just don't tell anybody. So I got a hold of my buddy and I said, we're going back next Saturday and we're going to the other joint. It's a big town, had two joints. We went back the next Saturday. I learned how to do everything but commit adultery. And I'd have done that, except you know how we are. We just get too tied up. And if we do, we don't know whether we did or not. And live a life of I don't know, because I never get to find out. You can't call back and say, did we do anything last night? So you just don't ever know. Walked in there and didn't even know I knew how to drink. Knew how. You just order one right after the other. Get the feeling so good, you can't feel it all. And there I started dancing, and Southern Baptists can't dance. You know, we've got four commandments. Don't commit adultery, drink whiskey, dance, or play cards. Nobody does the rest of them. So I learned how to dance and fall down the dance floor and break my nose just like you're supposed to. Got the feeling so good, I couldn't feel it all. Blacked out, just like I knew how. Went home, waked up the next morning, sicker than a dog. This guy called, said, how you feel? I said, God, I feel horrible. He said, yeah, but you had a great time. I said, oh, well. Then I knew how to have a good time. Go out and feel the good, so good you can't keep them feeling, and black out, wake up the next morning, feel bad. Then I knew if I waked up every morning, felt bad, had a good time. I even got to where I could throw up in the morning. I didn't even know I knew how to do that. Well, I did that for a while. I knew you couldn't do it a lot, so I just always made sure when I did it a lot. And I did not know you drank it any other way. I thought the ones that didn't drink it that way did not know how to drink it. I did not know you drank it any other way. I thought you ought to get it in the right place and make sure, set it free. Used to love to set little Jimmy free. Whatever was on my mind, it was on my mind. It had been on my mind too long. And I needed freedom. You know, I had brain damage from not drinking. I got freedom from drinking. That's the only relief I'd had. You know, praying didn't help me a lot. I prayed a lot, cried a lot, did a lot of things a lot. Never did me any good. Well, I kept doing that and had a war and I went and they stayed too long and they got up too early and they did think crazy things, you know. They'd get up at 3 o'clock in the morning and leave at 9. It was a bad outfit, the whole thing I was in. I just went through it and got through it all right and got out, and then everybody's going to school and I didn't want to go to school. I didn't know how to go to school. Hell, what am I going to go to school for? I already have two great trades working in a grocery store and a filling station. My folks intended for me to do more than that. I don't know why. Probably still been fine if I'd been standing there working at that grocery store. But I went to school, and of course I got that paper, but I forgot to get an education. Every place I went, I forgot to get what I went for. But I learned how to drink. I worked at a liquor store a while, and it showed me the different brands, and I learned how to do that. And found out you get drunk on every one of them. Then I finally got to where I was having some difficulty with women. I don't know where I learned it. Never had been anywhere but church and school. But you could put 10 pretty girls up there, and I'll get the sick one every time. I never could figure out, you know, they always told me you made sure that you got a girl that you could always marry. Anytime you ever went with one, you know, you have to be in love with her. And God, what's so horrible is when you're still in love and there's no girl there. So I always tried to make sure my romances lasted about a year. It'd take me a couple of months to find them, you know. Then when you get to AA, they got them grouped, you know. The ones that drink and one that don't, now they won't let you. You know, George won't let you do anything here. He protects all of us from the pretty girls. I had two, redhead and somebody else. He came, moved me out. Told me he thought it was time for me to go to the room. A lot of trustees, they don't do that, but I see you do it. I'm going to mention it to my group. Protect the girls. The only time I know I ever failed was when one girl wouldn't go with me the third night. But outside that, I never missed. I never missed. I knew how to find her when that... It tickles me today when a guy says... I said, well, what about that girl there? Said, oh, the chemistry doesn't mix. And I said, no, it doesn't. You got to have that chemistry if you want a sick deal. God, that's one that the chemistry mix, you can be totally, absolutely, completely... There's no way to live 5 minutes without each other. In 2 months, then it would just deteriorate from there on out. And I did that 1 year at a time. Gonna marry every girl that I ever had and didn't get married till I was 35. Worked at it every year. The greatest, you have to drink to do this, so I'll go ahead and tell you. The greatest way to do it is to have that one you're tapering out of. And a new one is so delightful to taper into and still go back and see that old one and go to that new one. You've got to drink to do that. You can't do that sober. It's just too hard on you. Well, I finally got to where I was having a little trouble with jobs. People always knew what I wanted, and everything they knew I wanted, I didn't want it. And they knew what I ought to do, and everything they thought I ought to do was something I didn't want to do. Nothing ever fit. I never did fit anywhere. And I'd give it everything I had, wouldn't fit. I'd do everything they wanted me to, didn't work. I wouldn't do anything they wanted me to, that didn't work. And finally, I got out of a job and couldn't get one. So I got to looking around and went to my dear friends. They didn't dislike me. They didn't treat me badly. There's just something you could feel that they were going to be better when I walked out the door. And I could tell it. And I'd go and apply for those jobs. That guy'd say, you don't want this job. I'd say, yeah, I want the job. No, you don't want the job. Nobody understood me. Nobody. I said, I want the job. I need it bad. I'm out of money and everything. No, you don't want this job. And you could tell when I left, they were relieved. You could just know they were going to be relieved. So the way I look for a job is I get up and throw up. And spray, and then go look for one job, and then take the rest of the day off, and get drunk. And I'd done that for about 3 weeks. And then I went out the golf course this particular morning, and ate an old egg, an old piece of toast. I know there's old one down over. I knew you had to eat something because I was planning on having a drink later. I never tried to drink in the morning. I tried to wait till 10:30, which is noon for Baptist. I don't know about anybody else. I didn't want to start drinking too early in the morning. You'd be an alcoholic. I just couldn't afford it. I knew I didn't know what they were for sure, and I knew as that guy slept downtown, and I knew if I never drink bay rum and don't drink too early, I'd be okay. Unless I'd been up real late, I never drank too early. Unless I was off or just wasn't tied up. Well, I had to adjust it some. So I went around after I'd ate this old egg to my spiritual advisor, the only guy that understood me. Ran this little old beer joint beside the golf course. And had one arm. And he said, "God, you look terrible this morning." I said, "You know, I may be coming down with something." He said, "The way you look, I think you need a beer." And I said, "My God, it's only 9:15. He said, "Well, the way you look, I don't think it's going to make any difference." And I drank half that beer and sprayed the golf course with it. I don't mind spraying unless I lose my concentration. Then when it gets in your nose burns, you know, it just irritates the hell out of you, and you have to drink the rest of the day, you know. And, of course, I knew how to meditate before I got here. You know, when it's stringy, you don't know where the end is. And you can't breathe. You get it all back. Just you and God and the commode. I start out with, "Oh, God," and then I never got to tell him the rest of it. I don't know what these commodes are made of, but it ought to help me in this energy deal they got. Because even in the hot summertime, there's always cool. I don't meditate that deeply and that close anymore, but when you don't know where you're staying or going, right after you get through that deep meditation like that, you got to rest a little. And you really can't get up at the time. It's just, you got to rest a while. And that cool commode was just, even in the hot summertime, fantastic. God just knew what he's doing for us poor folks, that's all. Knew we need a little cool, soothing care. Well, then I just decided to have a... I just told this guy, I said, "I think I'm going to go home. I must really be having something wrong with me." And I was vibrating pretty good, so I thought I'd go lie down. And I always liked to lie down when I was vibrating good, which is one thing I couldn't do. I always liked to do things I couldn't do. So I got in the living room. We called all the Jim Williams together. I love to have meetings with me. I can decide anything in the world. Never have to even go. I used to try to call on hospitals. Hell, lots of times never you have to park the car. I could decide whether he's going to buy or not. Just go on and have a beer. And said the son, but didn't buy nothing. Didn't even have to go in there where he was. Fantastic to have meetings with me. I still have them, you know. Just don't go by them. And I thought, well, I'll just commit suicide. And that'll show those guys. They'll worry about that the rest of their life. Just think about it. I committed suicide because they wouldn't hire me. And they'll have to worry about that the rest of their life. Well, this was before overdose was popular. You know, I'm still from the old suicide school where you cold turkey suicide, because if you get in the pill deal, you're not going to remember anything with the pump. And I hate guns because they're noisy and they splatter a lot. So this razor blades were popular then. But I didn't know how to do it. No, they don't teach this in school or church. And I don't know why half of us are going to need it, but they don't teach you how to do it. Now you can do it. They just suicide call that number. It's on television, you know. But I didn't have that number. I didn't know what to call or what to do or do anything. So I knew you couldn't do it in the living room. You get blood all over the carpet. Now I'm always thinking of others. So I went in the bathroom where I did a lot of that heavy work anyway. Sat on the commode, got my razor blade and cut both wrists just a little bit, and I'm just sitting there listening to the drip, and the phone rang. I thought, my God, what if where I'm going, I'll always wonder who that was called. That'd be enough to run you crazy. So I put a Band-Aid on my wrist right quick. Answered the phone. There's the police. This guy said, "Where were you last night?" I said, "I was right here." He said, "Oh, no, you wasn't." I said, "How do you know?" He said, "We was there." Then I didn't want to talk to him anymore. I'd already learned, don't talk to anybody that knows more about where you've been than you do. And he said, I said, "What do you think I ought to do?" And he said, "Well, either come down here or we'll come back out there and get you." And I knew he wouldn't tell me what it is. And I said, "What would you do?" He said, "I'd come down here and I'd get me a lawyer on the way."
You know, police need this program badly. I've never seen one of them yet didn't have personality change. Sober. They'd stop me, you know, and I'd say, I'm going home. They'd say, no, you're going with me. And I said, no, I'm not. I'm going home. And they'd just go crazy. And then if you insist upon not going, they'd go nuts. Then you got to pacify them and go along with them. Well, I didn't like the option that guy gave me. I had another meeting. It's only, you know, I'm having a heck of a day, and it's not 11 o'clock yet. Alcoholic can really have a big day. Throw up, commit suicide, and everything. It's not 11 yet. Had two big meetings and one emergency meeting, and we're getting ready to have another one. So I thought, well, nobody likes me in this town, Houston, anyway. I'll just leave. So I just left. Waked up, had $36, which is time to start a new career anyway. Waked up the next morning, $7. I believe I could die drunk if I'd been financed. The only thing wrong, I was always under, every time I made a move, I was underfinanced. So I was only 3 or 4 years old. So I hadn't exactly weaned myself away from the family yet. Thinking about it, though, now. Not seriously, but still thinking about it. So I called them, and they said, where are you? And I told them, they said, where are you going? I thought of a town out further west, and I knew I was going out there and see a friend I hadn't met yet, but I knew he was there. So they said, come by and have a cup of coffee. And I came by. And when I did, of course, that's what I need to do. I never shortchanged my folks. I always told them a complete story, told them how horrible it was, told them how bad it was, and I like the way we tell it. Because when we tell it, it's always horrible. There's no stories as bad as my stories, and they're the truth. And then I get to listen to them, and they're so horrible, I start crying myself. And then I finish up with that cry, and old John will say, well, old Jim's really honest, isn't he? Let him have 100. And I got up the next morning with a brand new world. $107 is, you can make any kind of move then you want to. Just go anywhere. So I told him, I said, you know, I've been drinking a little. They always looked at me funny, just blank. Just didn't do anything. Just looked at me. Just stood there with no expression. I've been drinking a little, and I decided last night I'll never drink again as long as I live. I drove right through that little old town, stopped at a filling station, asked them how far it was to the next town. They said 79 miles. So let me have 3 beers. And then I ended up in the Rio Grande Valley. And this is where my life began to change. That's real close to another country. I'd known that a friend moved down there, and I moved down there, went down there to see him. I'd like it only a 10.5-hour drive, and there wouldn't be any reason for an alcoholic to call. They might tell you not to come. So I drove down there, and they hired me after about 3 weeks. The reason they do is nobody goes through down there. They'll entertain hiring you if you're breathing, because nobody goes through down there, because the next country across that creek's Mexico, you know. And then it took me about 3 or 4 months to get into my place, and I always watched it. I'd just get a little drunk every night, then get up to where I was. And I was trying to go with these two girls. It's hard to go with girls when you're tied up a lot. You know, when you're working and drinking, you just don't have a lot of time. And you're solving a lot of problems. And I'd never drink till I got off work, unless I just didn't go to work. And so I'd call this girl and say, I'll call her about 4 o'clock, so I'll see you about 7:30. And then it may be 2 or 3 days before you get by there. I finally found me one that was a little different. The chemistry mixed okay, except we fought some. And I hadn't had one of those. You know, I didn't make a difference whether it was men or women. I lost. I just never was good at it. I'd start out good, and then I've just finished too quick. So, after the third fight, I was over at this girl's house, and we had it. I I was getting ready to, evidently, I told her I was going to go see another girl. Now, that's the wrong thing to say. And I do that sometime when I'm drinking. And so I went in the bathroom, and this girl followed me in there. And we discussed it there, which is a bad place to discuss anything. I had never realized that if you're going to have a fight, don't ever have it in the bathroom. Even when you lose your equilibrium and fall over in the bathtub, there's hard surfaces in there. The only soft place is you're standing on it. And you never do hit it, you know. And the lavatory's firm, and even that wooden toilet seat's firm. And I was staying in a nice place, and I ended up at home, which is always surprises me, that I'm where I am the next morning, even if it's home. I don't remember getting there. I was staying in an old trailer behind a motel. Didn't have to worry about the yard or anything, because the rock alley was my yard. And that, bam, something on that door. And I'd already learned how to wake up in total fright. I didn't even have to pray for it. I just wake up. I just love to wake up scared literally to death. Don't know why, just scared to death. And I'd think, you know, I'm going to quit waking up this way someday, but I never could stop. And there was a bang on that door, and I opened that door, and there was that First Baptist preacher standing at that door on Saturday morning at 7 o'clock. And this was one morning, evidently, I was going to leave kind of early because I still had my clothes on. I looked down there and had blood on that white shirt. And my total fright got into more total fright. And that preacher's kind of like, you know, they're preachers and police have kind of got the same words right at first. Come go along with me, you know. And I said, I don't think I can go like this. And, you know, I'm already vibrating, and that really does send you into something. I just feel like it's odd that the preacher's come to see me. So we went over to her house, and God, I walked that door, and I said, God, she looks terrible. And I noticed I had some hurts that didn't seem normal hurts. And so I sweat her out as much as I could, and I said, only I got to go to the bathroom. They're not letting me have a beer or nothing, you know. We're going to have a meeting. And I went in there and looked at that mirror. She won that fight. She looked good. I was the one that looked so bad. No wonder that preacher looked funny. Well, we decided to get married, which I thought was a good idea, too, because I had to have a beer and do something different. Because they wanted to change my life, and I knew my life needed to change, and that's right. The preacher says, you need to change your way. I said, there's no doubt about it. And when you're vibrating in total fright, don't really know what's going on, and you look like I do, there's a change necessary in your life. So we got married in the First Baptist Church, so it worked. We got married 10 o'clock in the morning, and no drinking before the funeral ceremony. And I said, I didn't want to invite anybody to the thing. So I didn't until I started drinking about 7 o'clock and started calling them about 11 and quit about 3. And the beer distributor, that was my good friend, said, I want you to know we didn't come to see you get married. We came because we didn't believe it. My friends didn't even speak to her friends. But we hooked it up. And he said, now I'm going to tell you something, and I don't want to disappoint you, but the longest bet on your marriage is 3 weeks. And boy, when I heard that, I showed him. We hung in there for 8 years, but my life changed. I had no idea what it was like to get up in the morning and throw up in peace. I'd grab that coffee and go in that bathroom and lock that door, and she's telling me what I am through that door, and I'd get upset and go to work, run out and get drunk, come back and tell her what she was, and we did that one day at a time. The only good day that I remember we had was when we was both just too tired. I lost that job and ended up getting a job with a drug company. Couldn't get one for 2 months.
And this guy managed this drug company was a drunk like me. The way I apply for a job is very simple. How AA people, alcoholics, get jobs. He said, meet me at the cafe. You know me. We don't have to go to the office. I said, of course not. We met at the cafe. I said, what time? 10:30. Well, that's my time. And he says, before breakfast, would you like a beer? And I said, oh, one. We had a sandwich about two. We'd driven down to Padre Island on the coast so he could show me the territory. We didn't get to see it, but I'm sure it was there. We drank till about 9 o'clock, and we were in this joint, and there's two girls in there from Kansas, and never been on a boat. And about that time, this guy came in and said, wanted to demonstrate a boat to this guy because he had a couple of boats, and of course, it had gotten dark. And we got in that boat and went underneath that causeway, going out in that gulf, and ran into something. The lights all went out and everything, and I had a girl up here with me and this pilot and the two people in the back, and everything just went to pot, you know, and I'd heard a voice saying, hey, Jim, help me. Help me. My God, I didn't know what they wanted me to do. I didn't know where I was or what the deal was. I wasn't even in total fright like I usually wake up. They put me in the back of the boat, and the water's coming up, and I can't breathe, and I know I'm ruined. We'd run into one of those pilings, clipped everybody's head off, you know, and eating that windshield is plastic. I don't mind plastic. And then the girl had gone up there and hollering and screaming. And I don't know why. They kept telling her to shut up. She only had her leg broken in three places. And just a fantastic time, you know, to end up a day. And the tide took us back to the coast, and they took us to a hospital to put us all in separate hospitals after it was over in 3 days. And insurance finally came and checked on us separately, and we'd all just had two beers. And I got the job. But he shipped me out of there in about 2 months, and he shipped me into a little town in West Texas with 536 people, and 36 of them were making a living. And 500 couldn't get out because it's 100 miles to the next town. But I had a new deal. Used to, I could get away and get drunk. But I was standing in those drugstores vibrating. And no way to change it. They just wasn't any way to change it. And one day that pharmacist says, you look like you're going to fly apart. I said, any minute. He said, well, take some of these. That's for Valium. I understand you can cross both eyes and walk straight with Valium. That was when Librium was there, and I took a couple of them and waited 15, 20 seconds. Nothing happened. So I took three more. And then I had to learn a new stance. Your leaves just go. I knew how to weave, but God, I didn't know how to do that. So for about 3 months, I took Librium in the daytime and drank beer, or if I was going home early, bourbon. I only had one decision at night. If I wanted to close the joint, I stayed on beer. If I wanted to go home early, I switched to bourbon. That's all I ever had to do. Didn't have to do anything else. And I ended up back in Houston. Somebody recommended me for a job, and I got it from a company I didn't know anything about. I couldn't tell them I didn't know anything about it, and they sent me down there and got the job anyway. And I ended up back in Houston of March the 1st of 1965. And it wasn't anything any different except I just wanted anybody to see me drunk. I didn't want these new customers to see me drunk. I'm not an alcoholic. I just didn't want them to see me drunk. I've got lots of problems. You know, what's her name's enough. And I don't like my work. I found out when I got to AA, I just don't like to work. Outside of that, I'm fine, you know. And then I lasted 9 months and played golf with these people that day. And the day before Christmas Eve of 1965, I went over to their house, and of course it was blackout time. I always left them, went to my favorite place or two, blacked out, went home like you're supposed to. I didn't know you went home any other way. I used to love drive before I blacked out because of Stripe. I used to always say, I'm going to ask him tomorrow night if his Stripe ever goes to the left. Mine always goes to the right. And I don't know how. I knew just close your left eye and it comes right back. I don't know where they taught me that. And I used to love to drive along. There's nothing to do anyway when you're driving. And if you got the eye closed, there's two tail lights. Open it up and you got eight, you know. Then if you can black out right at the door, it's just perfect. You don't have to talk to her about anything. Whatever you talk to her about, you don't have to remember it. And the next day if she tells you you said it, you know you didn't. But anyway, I blacked out and I did this. Not anything any different. I done 1,000 times. Drove from one side of Houston to the other. Next morning, waked up in total fright. Smoked cigarettes and gagged. I was always going to quit smoking because it made me gag. Quit smoking every day. And I picked up the phone and called them back to apologize for whatever it was I did. And I didn't really want to apologize. I wanted them to tell me what I did. And I'll never know because they don't have to make amends. So I'll never know. And they'd never tell you. They just said, oh, it's okay, Jim. You just got drunk. God, I was getting tired of hearing that. They didn't tell me I was a drunk. They just kept telling me it was okay. You just got drunk. And then I'd hear little things like, you know, I like him except when he's drinking. We could have him over if he's not drinking. And I was hearing all that. So that particular morning, I was in total fright. And I went on Christmas Eve and I went outside to see if the car's back. Sure enough, it's there. I don't know how it got there and can't ask. It's parked funny. Walk around it. No dew dents, no blood. So then I just go into fright. And I came back in. Oh, what's her name? Went next door. I think they're going to have a party or something. And I looked up in the phone book under Alcoholics Anonymous, and I'm not an alcoholic, and looked up and called in a group. I must have heard it on the phone, on the radio, because I don't know where else I'd heard it. And this gal acted like she was glad I called. People don't usually act glad when I call. And she said, somebody will be right out. Waited a whole hour, nobody showed. You know how jumpy these guys are on those 12-step calls? They were matching on the phone, and the one that lost was coming after me. Finally, this guy called and said, I'll be right there. And I said, I didn't want to see him. I'd already backed out. And I said, before I could tell him I didn't want to see him, he hung up. And I didn't know who I called. So I said, well, I'll just get rid of him. And I looked in the icebox, had 3 beers, and it's 10:15. God, 15 more minutes, it's a new day. Here he comes, little pointed-nosed guy, short, not looked like he's sad, looked just like that deacon. Had a book under his arm, and I said, oh, my God. We're going to pray and read that book. You know, I've not only been baptized, I've been rededicated 10 times. I said, well, I'll just get rid of him. He came in that door, we didn't read that book, we didn't pray, and I don't know what he said to me or asked. About that time, what's her name came in, he says, you want to go with me? And I didn't, but it's better staying with her. Got in that car and he hit one of those, that loop down there in Houston, and I, my God, you could tell that I'd gone off with a perfect stranger, didn't have my car, didn't know who he was. I must be crazy. He's not my type of guy, I can tell you that right now. He's not happy about nothing. And I said, I'll buy a beer. He said, I don't want a beer. I waited about 15 seconds. And I said, you got, see that 7-Eleven over there? You got to get this thing off this freeway or I'll walk off. I've got to have a beer and I've got to have it right now. He said, can you wait till we get to the club? I said, oh, yeah, I can do that. And he drove and he drove and drove, drove over in kind of a bad neighborhood. And there's a few cars around there that look pretty good, and the rest of them look about like mine. And I thought, well, old house. I thought, well, when I get some money, I'll help these folks. Opened the door, and some of those deacons sitting over there talking about the women in the stock market, and I found out later on I didn't know anything about either one. Had an old bar back there in the back with an old... The linoleum's got to be old when they put it on there. Had a hole in it. And the bartender didn't look a hell of a lot better than I did. And this little old short thing walked up there and said, mix him up a little milk and honey. I said, "My God, what do you put in it? I never drank anything like that in my life." He said, "Well, you see, you're nervous." I said, "Hell, that's what I've been trying to tell you." Said, "You've been used to sugar in your system from alcohol. And besides all that, the honey's already been digested." I said, "Indigestion is not my problem." I turned her up, that old milk curdled and came right back up. He said, "Don't worry about it, we have plenty." If I'd had my car, I'd have left them right then. One of the smart ones said, "Walk all you want to." Hell, I didn't want to walk at all. Kept me there all day long. And they just watch you. We got a new animal here, and they just watch me walking back and forth. Drinking that old sweet, sweet milk and honey. Finally, about 6 o'clock, he's going to take me home. I said, "Let me out front. Let me out in front." God, I was going to have to go get a beer and get rid of this whole show and not anymore. What's her name to see me? And he said, "I'll let you out in front, but I'm picking you up in an hour." I said, "What for?" I said, "We're going to a meeting." I said, "Where?" "Right back where we came from." I said, "My God, we was there all day." He is back. We went to that meeting. It's kind of a funny group. Some of them talked, but a lot of them didn't say anything. Looked kind of sad. Looked like they had lots of problems. And I kept watching them meetings. And I'd go in there, and then nothing seemed to happen. And there'd be a guy up there talking, you know, and they'd just talk away. And some of them would laugh, and then they'd say the Lord's Prayer, and then it exploded. I said, "Now, Lord, I didn't see the Holy Spirit or nothing move in here. Wonder how they got there. Nothing happened to me. But Lord, they got to hugging and kissing and just all talking at the same time. Those that couldn't talk at all got talking." And then I saw men and women getting together and going out there and getting the car taken off. I'm with the only deacon that's not invited. We don't get to, I know what they're doing, you know. They're going to go after you here and have a little drink, talk about it, you know. But they didn't invite me. We're here 3 months and never got invited. Never. I don't know where they're going, but I think I know. But they don't invite me. I'm with the only deacon that nobody likes. So I just went out and got drunk. Then you got to crawl back. You know, you come through the crack. You don't even have to open the door. Just come on through the crack. Then they run up, act like they haven't been talking about you. They wouldn't be so glad to see you back if they hadn't been talking about you. Run in there and put your arm around and say, "Everything's going to be all right." Hell, it ain't going to be all right. I've been here 9 months, went to meeting every night, 3 months, and nothing ever happened. Went 3 more months, got drunk again. Worked the convention. Didn't know how you work it any other way, and I asked them, they said, "Call AA and don't drink." And those are the only 2 things I forgot to do. I knew all the rest of it, I just forgot those 2 things. Then one night it was raining, this guy said, "Be by and pick you up in 15 minutes. I said, "It's raining." She said, "Did you ever go get a drink when it's raining?" I said, "I'll be ready." Then one night I got so sick of the meetings I couldn't stand. Nothing's happened. I was miserable every day. So I just turned, pulled down all the shades. Oh, what's her name is gone. I just pulled down all the shades, and turned on the TV sets and turned out all the lights. I said, "I was right here watching television. I hadn't seen television in 3 months. He said, "Well, you missed it." I said, "What?" He said, "I don't know." I said, "Wasn't you there?" He said, "Yeah." I said, "Well, you're not going to tell me?" He said, "I don't know." I said, "Well, were you there or not?" He said, "Yeah, but I only heard what I was supposed to hear. we'll never know what it was you're supposed to hear. I said, my God, you got to go every night or you're going to miss it. Went out and got drunk. 3 more months. And one guy says, well, I see now you've changed from a daily drinker to a periodic. Said, you haven't learned anything, but you're different. And I went back to that meeting after that last drunk. And at that meeting, that little short guy came up there and said, don't ever call me again. I said, oh, God, I'm glad you said that. I didn't call you in the first place. They chose you. I didn't choose you. And I never liked you. And if I had as bad a personality as you did, I'd go back to drinking. And you don't have to ever worry about it. I'll never call you again as long as I live. And I didn't until next morning. And he said, meet me at the club. And I met him in the club, walked there. He said, get your coffee and sit down. They talk to you pretty bad here, you know. And he said, now I want you to look me straight in the eye. Said, there's absolutely no failure in Alcoholics Anonymous. It does not fail. Al-Anon, Al-Ateen, Al-Atot, or Al-A-Dog does not fail. There's absolutely no failure here. Provided you do exactly what we tell you to do, the way we tell you to do it. So you're going to get to make all the decisions here, but that's all you're going to get to do. You're not going to get to do anything but make decisions. That's all you're going to get to do, but you're going to get to make them all. So I'm going to give you a decision to make. You either do exactly what I tell you to do, and we tell you to do, the way we tell you to do it, or go right back out that door. I said, I don't want to do either one. He said, I didn't ask you what you wanted to do. I asked you what you're going to do. I said, do you mean tell me you don't care whether I want to or not? And he said, not at all. I said, well, I don't like this either. And he said, perfectly all right. I said, you mean y'all don't care whether I want to or don't, or whether I like it or not? And he said, not a bit. I said, well, if you'll make it perfectly clear I don't want to do it, I'll do it. I said, what is it you want me to do? He said, well, first of all, you don't know how to not do anything. So we've got to teach you how to not do something. So we're going to give you something not to do. And the not to do is going to change. Then we're going to give you some things to do. And the to do will never change except you just add to. Then it'll happen over here. I said, what'll happen over here? He said, we don't know. I said, well, if you don't know, how am I going to know? He said, oh, you'll know. And I said, when? He said, right after it happened. I said, well, I don't understand anything you're telling me. He said, now you got it. I said, you didn't hear me. You never listened to me. I said, I do not understand. He said, and that's it, and don't you ever forget it. There's two things that you're going to remember every day for the rest of your life. And the first thing is that no matter what's going on in your life, you do not understand. Then you'll begin to have understanding. And when you quit trying to figure it out, you'll enjoy having understanding without understanding. And the next thing is that no matter what your situation is, no matter who's involved in your life, it's never them, it's never your situation, it's never God. It's always you that must become different. You're going to have to become different than you've ever been before. I said, how do I do that? Oh, you can't. I said, what'd you tell me for then? He said, oh, when you do what we tell you not to do and to do, you will become different. And you're going to need to become different in every way that you are. Just stopping drinking won't do it. He said, see, there's some things you need to know. The first thing is, you don't think right. I said, what's wrong with my thinking? He said, you just don't think right about things that's going on, things that's going to go on, things that's gone on. I said, well, how much of my thinking's wrong? He said, we always start with all of it. And if there's any good, we'll let you know. I said, you put a sign up there that says, think, think, think. And he said, that's for us. Said, now there's one thing that got you here. There's one thing that put you in the depths of despair that you had when you got here. There's one thing that caused you to lose everything you had. There's one thing that caused you to become what you were. This same thing will keep you from getting everything that's available to a human being today in Alcoholics Anonymous. And this is the most important thing of your life. It's what got you here, but it'll also be the thing that'll keep you from getting everything that's here. As long as you know that you know, you'll never know. But when you begin to do what we tell you not to do and to do, and you begin to know that you don't know, then you'll begin to know. I said, hell, you're crazy. And he said, I know. God, it's getting late. Must be talking slow tonight. I said, okay, what is it you want me to do and not to do? He says, first of all, now I'm going to tell you how to not do something. And remember, you're going to need to learn this. You're going to have to do it this way. This is the way we're going to not drink or take a pill. Remember those numbers I gave you, mine and four other guys, and the club's number, and the intergroup number? I said, yeah. When you feel squirrely, definitely before you take a drink or a pill, you either call one of those numbers, no matter what it is, or go to the club, or go to intergroup. And do it when you feel squirrely. If you just gut it through the day and don't drink and didn't call anybody, didn't do it right. And what's supposed to happen won't happen. And you're going to need to learn to do that, because that's going to be part of you becoming different. And now here's what I want you to do. And I want you to begin to do this every day for the rest of your life. We'll add to this as we go along. I will tell you what we'll add to. They don't let you figure that out. You don't have to figure out anything here, you know. And then in the morning, I want you to get down on your knees, and I want you to say these words and these words only. God, take me today and let me be what you want me to be. Let thy will only be done in my life. Help me to definitely not take a drink of anything alcoholic or a mind-changing drug. Amen. Don't need to give God any more instructions. Don't need to tell him what he's not doing or doing. Don't need to add a thing to it. Then call me before you go to the bathroom. I said, why before I go to the bathroom? You may not need to go. I said, do you mean to tell me you don't think I got sense enough to know when I need to go to the bathroom? He said, we'll find out. They don't really build you up real heavy here, you know, at first. Boy, I got down on my knees next morning. I said, God, you and I know he don't know. He's a Presbyterian. But we're going to do it just exactly like he says, so when we get through to walk away from this baby, we can tell him we did it just exactly like he said, and he's wrong. It did not work. So I got on my knees and did my deal and called him. He said, go to the bathroom, meet me at the club. And I met him at the club, and he said, now go to work. I said, oh, I couldn't go to work yet. He said, why couldn't you? I said, well, I was sitting in the chair till noon. He said, what were you doing? Thinking. He said, well, you just didn't know how to go to work. I said, how do you do it? He said, go get in the car. I said, oh, I just didn't know how to go. And meet me back here at 5 o'clock. Met him back at the club. And you know how they are? Right before the rest of them, get your coffee and sit down. I know to do that, you know, but they have to tell you right in front of everybody. Then when you're almost getting comfortable and kind of listening to them and almost wanting to laugh, but you're afraid to, they say, go home and eat and come back to the meeting. I know to do that, but they got to tell you. And I come back to the meeting, and after the meeting, he said, now go home and thank God for the day. I said, I do not thank God for the day. It's been a miserable day. I've hated every minute of it. I've hated the meeting. I've hated everything here. I hate her. I hate God. I hate everything there is. I do not thank God for today. And he says, I bet you don't want to do that because you think you've got to be sincere. I said, you bet you. I'm not going to be a hypocrite like some of them others. He says, remember, it's only the action that you're taking that you don't even know you're taking that's going to make you different. Never your thinking. Your thinking, no matter what it is, will never make you different. It's only the actions you're taking against your thinking that's ever going to make you different. I said, do you mean to tell me it doesn't make a difference whether I'm sincere about it or not? He said, not at all. I said, nobody cares? He said, nobody. Well, I just went home, got on my knees. I said, okay, by God, God, thank you for a miserable damn day. Amen. He don't care, and God don't care. I don't care. Did it just exactly like they told me to do it for about 2 months. And I'm riding down the 610 loop one morning about 9:15 near Memorial Drive in Houston. And this God that I had never known as a friend moved in that car with me. And I had my first good day in Alcoholics Anonymous. And I knew that I knew something for the first time in my life. I knew I would never have to drink again if I didn't insist upon it. And I knew that. And I thought the rest of my day is going to be just like that. Lord, I couldn't wait for 4:30 to be there. It was a fantastic day. I thought, Lord, we'll get a tent and some tambourines, and we'll go out here and save some souls. When he got in there, I said, get your coffee and sit down. The Baptist is taking over. He did. They don't like that. But he did it reluctantly. Then he looked at me and I told him what had happened. And he grinned a little and says, thank God we've got that over with. Now we can get started. I said, my God, that took a year. He said, some are sicker than others. I said, what are you going to do about old what's-her-name? Might as well give him the tough stuff next. He said, I'm not going to mess with you anymore. I'm going to send you to a guy that's got his home worked out. And he went through what it takes to do it. And he sent me to this guy, and he's Episcopalian. You know, I can't find any Baptist. They're there, they just don't admit it for a while. This guy said, "What do you want?" I said, "I either want that one relationship with one woman I've seen some men have, or if I can't have it, then I won't know I can't have it, and I'm going to quit trying." And he says, "You know, a lot of people that are married now here are married right. Most of them are. But they still got to get it worked out together." And he said, "Some are not. Some oughtn't to be married at all." He said, "But I'll tell you something. You remember that lonesome walk that you made when you got to AA? You didn't fit back out there, and you didn't fit in here either?" I said, "Yeah." He said, "If you're willing to make all the lonesome walks that's necessary for every area of your life to become different, if you're willing to do that, I'll not only guarantee you a relationship with a woman you've never had, whether it'll be her or somebody else, won't have anything to do with it. I'll guarantee you a relationship with your fellow man you could never have dreamed of. And I'll give you a bonus on top of that. I'll give you a guarantee your relationship with God that you could never have believed in your wildest dreams." I said, "I don't believe that." He said, "Oh, you don't have to." I said, "Do you mean to tell me I do not have to believe?" And he said, "Not at all." He said, "That's God's problem. You just do what we tell you to do and don't do what we tell you to do." I said, "Well, what is it I'm not to do?" "Well, first of all, you've got to know how to have a relationship with a woman, whether it'll be her or not. You don't know how." We're never going to tell her what's wrong with her ever again. I said, "Who's going to tell her?" He said, "I don't know. I don't know. You're not. And you're never going to do anything in any form, fashion, or way with money, with people, with any way to try to work her around to get her to do something ever again." I said, "Never?" He said, "Never. And you're going to pray for her." I said, "I'm not." He said, "Yes, you are, and you're going to say these words, 'God, thy will be done for her as well as for me.' I do not want God's will to be done for her as well as for me." He said, "Remember, what you want has nothing to do with it. You may have to make that prayer many times a day." Well, I had a bad case of telling her what was wrong with her. I got up the next morning and could not speak to her without telling her. So I have to leave. That's all I could do. It took me a month before I could just go to the bathroom and cool down past murder and don't say anything. And I prayed for her many times a day. And then what shows up? Not doing has never failed for me. And I don't believe it ever does. Then it showed up what was wrong with me. Whatever this thing was that I had, love, lust thing with women, I had it. And it hurt. And I couldn't get rid of it. And I told my sponsor over and over and over again. Didn't work, so I told the group. Still didn't work, so I slipped over and told another group. And one of them snitched on me. No, they don't gossip here. They're just concerned. He said, "We've heard all about you and oh, what's her name and all about that thing till we're so sick of hearing about that. And I want you to go home and get in that apartment and lock that door and don't you come out of there. You and God settle that." And I did, and I cussed and I prayed some of them long ones and any kind I could, and I'd hit the couch. I'd learned to quit hitting the bar. It hurt your hand, you know. And sometime 11, 12 o'clock, I went to bed, went to sleep. And next morning, I wasn't there. I didn't tell him for 4 nights. And then after that fourth meeting, I said, "I guess I might as well tell you." He said, "Oh, we knew it the first night." I said, "Why didn't you tell me?" He said, "Well, you need to know. We even knew that last drunk he wasn't going to drink anymore." I said, "Why didn't you tell me?" He said, "Well, you need to know that you're always going to be the last to know." I said, "Why is that?" And he said, "We don't know." Evidently, you got to be last before you can be first, so you just have to be last. So that's all we know. But you always have to be. Said, "I guess God can't trust it with us too quick." Well, there wasn't anything to do, so I got together with my sponsor, And oh, what's her name and I got a divorce. For those of you that are concerned about her, 2 months later, I saw her best friend, and she said, have you seen old what's her name lately? And I said, no. Happier than I have ever seen her. Now, that hurt me deep. I wanted to call her and tell her what she was, because I bet you nobody been telling her for 60 days. They wouldn't let me go with anybody. And I'd been in AA, and I picked, you know, they're just fresh coming right through the door. And they're coming through, and some of them don't drink. They meet in the other room. And you know, you can take a choice. And God, the chemistry, you can just see it. God, I saw that girl. I just knew she was ideal. And they wouldn't let me do it. I said, God, they told me that at 14. He said, get the message. Tell me again at 44. Don't do it. Had brain damage again. They would not let me go with anybody. And they would not let me start up anything. And if I was going to do anything, I had to tell them first. And they told me that if I was associating with any woman, anywhere, anytime, in any capacity, they don't trust you, you know, that I was to make sure that I let them know that even though God may not be ahead of all of my life, that that's what I wanted. And that's what I was going towards in spite of anything else in my life. And I need to establish that with anybody I associate with. Well, I was calling on, I sold the hospitals. So I was calling on this girl in the hospital, and we talked about God and work and nothing else. They couldn't keep me from thinking, but we did not talk about it. And I took about, after 4 or 5 months, I took 5 women to the convention, and she was one of them. And we were accused of going together, and sure enough, I got some of them funny feelings, but it was different. And so I went back 3 days later, and I said, we got to see you in the office, and we got to quit all this talk, and we got to get down talking about something else. And I said, I've got to tell you the truth. I cannot afford an affair. My sponsor will not let me. And that shocks a person. It's out of the blue. And I said, and besides that, I might as well tell you all of it. I'm an Alcoholics Anonymous. They allow me to do 2 things, work and go to meetings and nothing else. That's all I get to do. They don't allow me to do anything else. The only thing I can do on the side is think, and that's all. But I can't do anything else. Won't let me do anything else. Just won't do it. And she said, what's it all about? Well, I don't know. You know, they cry a lot and drink a lot of coffee and smoke too much and fuss because it's too smoky, and they cuss and cry and pray and complain because they can't sleep at night because they drank too much coffee, and, you know. I said, I just have to call my sponsor. So I called him, and he says, what have you been doing? I said, I ain't done nothing. He said, bring her over here. I said, you'll have to go see my sponsor. She looks funny, but she goes. We go over there, and he had a Episcopal bookstore. Went in the bookstore and went around the ones a meal, and they do the same thing they always do. Stand over there, Jimmy. We'll handle this. Don't need your comments or anything. Just stand. Talk to her for an hour and a half. I thought, well, I believe he's going with her. Then turned around to me and says, well, God might be going to do something for you. But I knew what to do then. You know, just go sign George's name, get it started. I know how to get them going. They just give me the light. I've been sitting there on costume for 2 years. And they said, no, you can't do any of that. I said, what are you going to do? Leave it alone. She's got to get in to Al-Anon and see if she likes it. Got to find out about alcohol. You know, if you don't have God, AA, and Al-Anon in your home, you're not going to have it. You can't have it any other way. Won't work any other way. You've got to have AA, Al-Anon, and God in your home. It won't work. God had brain damage again, waiting. I couldn't keep from telling her how to go to that first meeting. I just had to tell her.
I said, go in there and tell them your name's Eloise and don't tell them another thing. That did not work. She didn't tell them who it was, but she said she's going to an alcoholic. They spent two meetings telling her why she shouldn't go to an alcoholic. So I took her to an open meeting, and she heard the woman alcoholic. And she heard the program of Alcoholics Anonymous. And she went back to her group and said, you got a program here, and I want it. Wasn't too long after that that we were thrown together. About 5 or 6 months later, they taught us how to pray together and pray separately. And we still do that today. And I now have that relationship that God gives one man and one woman. And it is totally free. And God did change me in it and continue to do so. I could set her free, and we do have God, A-N-L, non-living in our home. She had three children. The oldest one was married and had a daughter and was a Southern Baptist minister. He had a little trouble, so he didn't rush to see us. We saw him about a year and a half later. And I gave him the big book and the 12 and 12, and their students, they didn't like the big book, thought we was claiming salvation. I didn't get into that with him at all. And they liked the 12 and 12 because they're student-type people. And he finally called about a year later and said, Mama, you're right. I can save them, but I can't keep them sober. He couldn't understand as he took them to AA. He didn't buy it, but he took them, but he couldn't understand why they didn't all stay. Finally, he just couldn't buy his mother. He had gotten a divorce, was hard enough on him. But it was too hard for him for a while that his mother married an alcoholic. And then finally, they came to see us and spent some time with us, and that little girl got to calling me Papa Jim, and we kind of fell in love. And that warmed everything up. And then they began to come to us instead of his other father. They're now in Venezuela, looking forward to them coming home next summer. They want us to come to see them. And they're coming to Dallas, Fort Worth, to see us. And they're missionaries now. She had the middle son that didn't worry about too much, except he had two children. And he just came over to see how his mother was and want to know if she's happy and what she's doing. And saw she was happy, and that's all he wanted to know. But that little boy they had was about 3 and a half. Knowing nothing about children, barely becoming a husband, and now I'm going to have to get to my sponsor and start being a father and a grandfather all at one time. And I saw that they couldn't control that thing. And it was tearing everything up, and there was nothing they could do about it. I thought, well, there's a pool out there. We'll just let him have an accident, and the whole family's going to be better off. But before action, I discussed it with my sponsor, and he says, that's not the way grandfathers do. Five years later, they came to see us in Fort Worth, and he loves his grandmother, and she loves him, and they've got a special relation. But he said, Nana, I'm going to sleep with Papa Jim tonight. I don't know where you're going to sleep. The daughter, her boyfriend, married somebody else. And she ended up quitting college and going off with an old boy with a beard and smokes on that pot. And finally, Eloise and Alan handled that in spite of I knew what they should do and I just couldn't tell them. But they did well with that. And I knew that would be the only thing that's going to tear us up. And Eloise and Al-Anon let her go. 6 months after she let her go, that boy cleaned up, got off a pot, went back to school and got his degree, and they had their first child, a little girl, 2 years ago in February. She called her mother to come down and be with her that 3 or 4 weeks, and then after that baby was born, she called and came in. She was terrible to be around before, had the worst personality of any pretty little blonde I ever saw. Now she's an absolute delight to be with. And she said, I want you to look at that little girl, and I want you to see her every 2 months because I want her to know who her grandfather is. Talked to her right before I left, and you know what she said to me? Papa Nana is all she could say, but it sure was sweet. And they don't know it, but she's really mine.
And that boy had lost his father from drinking about 10 years ago. And he told me 2 years ago, Thanksgiving, he said, "I'm so grateful to AA that they've given me a father after all. And I never had one." I'm glad I know some things tonight about you and I. The first thing I was glad to know, that I know that you and I are right on time, no matter when we got here. That it was the perfect time for you and I. That everything that I had to do up through this time was what I had to do with the path that God's taken me down. And I know the same about you. No matter what you did, whether it looked like it was right or wrong, good or bad, that's your path. I don't know where that path's going to take you, just like I don't know where my path's going to take me. But I know, you and I have been chosen by God to go this way, down whatever path He chooses for you and I. I'm grateful to know that I know God chose you and I. And I'm grateful to know tonight that until I got to you, nothing in my life was ever going to be worthwhile. I had to be prepared to be sent to you like God sent you. But it was you that I was looking for. Because only you was going to be the answer to every solution that I had. But until I got to you, nothing was ever going to be worthwhile in my life. And I know that. And I'm glad to know that the only thing in my life now that I need to know is I need to know more and more that I really am God's child, just like you. And I know that that's all you need to know. Because the more I know that in depth, the less anything out there bothers me, or can bother me. But see, I'm so grateful. You loved me when I was not lovable, and you tricked me into loving somebody else when they weren't lovable. I didn't even know that's what I was doing. And I'm grateful I stayed with you long enough that I felt God loving me that day, and that day I was capable of loving Him back. But see, the difference was you. It was you that I had to see. It was you that I had to be with. You are the difference in my life, just like it is right now, when I can feel you loving me and me loving you. Thank you very much.